Oh no, this is not how the show should start back up again.
Do you know what I thought right there? Is I thought that Joel, we just so the audience knows, this is not planned. This is not scripted. But I thought that we can see each other's videos as we're waiting to go live. And I saw Joel going like this, and I thought he was prepared for like an intro segue segment. And I was like, okay, Joel's getting, you know, a little bit creative, you know, mixing it up a little bit, starting the show. But he's withdrawn before the tournament even starts, which much like his favorite Ludwig Gobert is the case for this tournament. Spence, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Joel, it's good to see you back.
Listen, I wasn't gone. I guess you guys couldn't hear me, but I could still hear you. And so, David, I heard you starting to say about how you saw me preparing. And that is what happened with like 10 seconds left. I saw my internet was going out, but I was like, it's too late. I don't know what to do. It's going to go out. And it just froze. So the reality was we weren't back yet. But we are back now. It's been 2 weeks. We've missed you all. We've missed you all a great deal, but I am so excited to be back. And now we're heading into a big swing of some elevated events, some majors. This is the prime peak of golf season. I am so excited to get hot with you and make some dollars. So, audience, we apologize. We've missed you for 2 weeks. As our way of welcoming all of you back, we are going to allow you to choose the order tonight. So the first person to post an order in the chat, that's the order we're going to go with for the draft tonight. With that being said, if you are following along, maybe you're new to the show, be sure to not only watch the show, but do it through YouTube, because if you get on the YouTube channel, you can draft along with the audience. So you can pick your team with team audience, have a say, vote for your picks. And by next week, we'll be crowning a winner and you can be part of it as you participate in this draft. Zach Jeffers, we appreciate you. It looks like the order is in. Spencer, congratulations. You have the first pick. But before we dive in, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm doing better now because of Zach. I appreciate that. You know, it's nice to be back on this show after missing the last couple weeks. I think we have a lot of really interesting things in store, and you know, we'll be able to drop some more of that information as we go on. We have some big guests lined up. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's everything that you know about this show and even better moving forward. So excited to see some of these people that we're going to have on in the next handful of weeks.
I love it. As Spencer said, we are turning the heat up. And when we do that, we're making money. Of course, David Bileski knows everything about that as he's been red hot this season picking winners. David, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Look, pumped for this tournament. I think this is such an iconic golf course. I'm looking forward to hearing Spencer's expert breakdown, one of the best in the business with his course breakdown, because Quail Hollow is one of my favorite spots on the PGA Tour season. So iconic. Always produces a really great winner and always produces a great tournament. So I'm absolutely amped to see how the 69 players compete this week after the removal of Ludwig from the field. Nice.
I love it. The Wells Fargo, Quail Hollow, North Carolina. As David said, it's an interesting course, and it's definitely one you're going to want to hear the course breakdown. I do think there's going to be an edge in the type of golfer this week especially. So, Spence, as you do every week, enlighten us. What type of golf profile are you looking for in your golfers at Quail Hollow this week?
As everybody's talked about, this isn't a very illustrious golf course. We've seen this with past major championships, President's Cup. That's just in the past several years. You look at that 2017 PGA Championship, that marked to me a very significant milestone for this venue just because it's the third time a renovation had been done at the property in the past 25 years. You got extra length added to the facility. You got a lot of other things that have come into play. We've seen more trees added to the mix, which we'll get to in a second, but you get this tree-lined parkland, which has these undulating fairways that present this very strategic test. That's something that reduces driving accuracy by nearly 8%. My model's been a big believer that, and this is where the tree factor comes into play a little bit here, but it's been a very big believer that long courses with limited accuracy actually tend to further benefit quality drivers of the ball who actually have length, since everyone is going to miss fairways. That's something that I implemented into my model that is going to be, I think, a little bit different than everybody else of how they're building it. I mean, I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts with that, but you see it come to fruition right away, 17-yard increase in driving distance versus a random track. You're going to get a lot of these smaller factors. You want to look at the fast Bermuda greens. That produces a 25% increase for three-putt totals over a standard stop. All that adds to this narrative, but you're essentially looking at a course that's going to place golfers in what I deem to be a constant battle of aggression. You want length off the tee. That gives you one step of the equation, but you also get this 13% enhancement in projected approaches from beyond 175 yards. That two-step formula is a very specific blueprint. This is not going to be one of those courses like we saw at TPC Craig Ranch last week where it turns into a birdie shootout. You have 10 holes that feature somewhere between a 20 to 35% bogey or worse rate. This is a fun tournament. This is more of, we can talk all this throughout this show, how I don't think any of us love the idea of these limited field, no-cut tournaments. That's not necessarily from a betting perspective, DFS, anything. None of that works well. But if you're going to give me a limited field and everybody's going to be playing 4 days, I'd rather it be at a course like this that we can actually see players separate themselves from the pack.
That's an interesting point, and I think it's an important tidbit because it is different than the normal tournament with 150 golfers in a cut event. And so it does change your strategy. It's an important thing to make sure you're aware of these things. You don't just pick golfers every week randomly, right? You have to know there's different strategies based on the golfers playing, how strong the field is, the type of golfers, if it's a no cut, if you're guaranteed 4 days, there's different strategies to go along with that. So we'll get more into it as we draft tonight, but I think we can head right into it. We'll pull the draft board up and we'll get right into this draft. Let me look back up. Spencer, you ended up getting the first pick. So you were on the clock here. Audience, you're second. So you can start getting your nominations in relatively quickly, but I'd love to see where Spencer's going here with the first pick.
So I think this board took a turn, you could say, for the worse when Oberg pulled out of the event. There's very concentrated ownership in particular sections of this board now. You also look at this $10,000 and up range, which now only has three golfers. And you have this deviation in pricing that's going to occur from those three names. So I made this joke even when I wrote in an article for Action Network. I had Oberg as my one solo pick to win this event before I ended up changing my card once he pulled out. I've made this joke already. Like, I think in the entirety of this show, when you look at all of us, I think we've all been Wyndham Clark whisperers at times with what we've been able to produce, whether it's him winning this tournament, him winning at the US Open, him winning at Pebble Beach. I love Wyndham Clark in this spot. I know he's going to be very popular. I understand that narrative, but he was one of the three outrights that I have on my card this week. I see 25% ownership right now. The number one player in my model, when you look at long courses, and if you want to throw into the mix just the putting acumen that he brings to the table, number two in weighted putting. So he has that skill set that I'm looking for of distance off the tee, this increase in the last year in weighted proximity, and then a putter is one of the reasons why he has that upside to win this tournament. So in an event where I don't think it's as strong as you would think for an elevated event with a lot of players in questionable form, Scotty's having a kid, Oberg's out of the tournament because of injury. To me, Wyndham Clark is arguably the favorite, and I know this is more of a betting answer that I'm giving than anything, but I had a hard time envisioning a world where Rory was 7, Xander was 10, and Wyndham opened at 18. It seemed like a spot that they all should have been in the same vicinity of each other. So I think on the DFS board, when we get this rebate and this discount, I'm going to start with Wyndham Clark.
Well, I will say I endorse that pick. I like Wyndham Clark a lot this week. You know, the only hesitation I even considered with Wyndham Clark is, and I'll say it this way intentionally, they've now priced him correctly. He should be this price. This is where he, you know, belongs. We're used to seeing him maybe a tier lower, and he's like not in value play. He's still usually one of the more expensive golfers, but you know, someone you can squeeze in as your stud, but maybe in the mid to nine carry. Now you're paying him as your top guy, but I think to Spencer's point, I see him having as much upside as anyone in this field, the way he's been playing this season. So he's definitely someone I'll be looking to roster. David, while we remind the audience that you guys are on the clock, so get your nominations in. As a reminder, it takes two, so a nomination and a double for your pick to lock in. I'd love to get your take here on Wyndham Clark.
Well, it's the return of the draft cast after 2 weeks away, and it's the return of Spencer stealing the first pick from me. And would have loved to have had Wyndham Clark here. I think objectively, I think you're right, Joel. He's priced at the top of the market where he should be. But objectively, he still seems underpriced. When you're comparing him to someone like Xander Schauffele, who's an extra $1,000, you can do a lot with that extra salary. We've seen Wyndham turn up at these big events throughout the year. Outside of Scottie Scheffler, he's been the second best golfer in the world, realistically, at these big events. You know, precluding the fact that Stephen Yeager's the only golfer who's actually beaten Scottie Scheffler over the last few months. I think it's fair to say Wyndham Clark's been playing at that level. He's ranked third in the world at the moment. I think a lot of people are missing that fact that Wyndham Clark is currently the third best ranked golfer in the world, after Scottie Scheffler, obviously, as the world number one. So I like him to defend this week. I think that he was great value in the betting market, as Spencer alluded to, at the 18s when he first opened before Ludvig withdrew, especially compared to someone like Xander's priced around that 10-1 for a guy who just like hasn't won a tournament for the last 2 years and really should have. So I think he's great value, and I would have absolutely taken him for the first pick. Great pick from Spence.
Boom. There you have it. Audience, great job getting your pick in Xander Schauffele with the second pick in the draft. Again, having a great season. I think he's overpriced here. Again, I like Xander. I think he's a play, but I think you can do more with that salary. So I will pass to you first, Spence. Are you interested in Xander at all this week?
I probably would have started my lineup if I had the potential to do so with Wyndham and Xander. When you look at the top three guys, like all this is a 69 man field, and you're going to have a lot of ownership just naturally because of that answer. And all three of those names that we're going to talk about throughout the show are over 20%. But for me, that the most intriguing thing, and I think it kind of comes from your answer, Joel, at least from what more people are thinking than not with it, when you compare the three of them together, I think a lot of people have gotten frustrated with Xander not winning golf tournaments, and you see him here at $11,500, and I have him at 21% ownership. I tend to think that this might be one of those opportunities to where in the betting market, unfortunately, he got completely priced out of consideration. And, you know, that sometimes happens to where guys go on and win a golf tournament, but Xander was the number one player in my model with the way I ran it. It doesn't mean that I love his price tag inside of the betting market, but the difference with DFS that comes into play is we can at least make a calculated decision based off of ownership. And if you're telling me that we can create a little bit of leverage there with Xander, I still like him this week. I think he's an intriguing name to either start lineups with or pair with one of these top names also.
Boom. There you have it. David, would love your take on Xander Schauffele. And then you're on the clock.
Yeah, look, I really liked Xander this week. I was hoping in betting markets that he'd open in that 15 to 18 kind of range, with Rory being a heavy favorite. And unfortunately, that wasn't what happened, because I think if he was in that range, it would have represented some good value. I appreciate the struggles that he has getting across the line, but this really does look like a golf course that's kind of made for Xander. Particularly, I'll point out that this golf course is so long that you'll get 75% of your approach shots from over 150 yards. It's a huge disproportionate weight towards those long irons. Xander Schauffele is the best in the world since January of this year, over 200 yards, by quite some margin. Like, it's not even close between him and second place in the world in terms of that approach bucket. So I think he's playing a lot better this year than he has been. He hasn't quite got across the finish line yet, but I think that he can give you a really consistent result. And I think the fact that he's 21% versus Wyndham Clark and Rory being much higher owned makes an intriguing spot for him.
Boom. There you have it. All right, David, with your first pick, who are you looking at here?
Yeah, so It was interesting last year, right? I picked Wyndham Clark to win here at 75-1 and then also was on him at the US Open at 80-1 when he won that tournament. And Los Angeles Country Club ended up being a really good guide for Quail Hollow, beyond the fact that Wyndham Clark won both. But Xander Schauffele, for example, was right there in it until a plus five in the final round, still finished in the top 10. Guys like Harris English, Ricky Fowler, Adam Scott, all of these guys have a very good record at Quail Hollow and Los Angeles Country Club. And the other name, other than Wyndham Clark, it was the player who finished second at the US Open, who also has an excellent record at Quail Hollow, Rory McIlroy, who I'll take with the first pick here for my team. He'll be going for his fourth victory here. He's finished second twice. He's had a fourth here before as well. And a lot of that comes back to my answer about the approach bucket's been at 75% over 150 yards. If there's one flaw in Rory McIlroy's game, it is with a wedge in hand. That is somewhere he struggles. The reason why this golf course is so good for him is he can use his prodigious driving distance. And he doesn't need to hit as many wedge shots here as he does at other spots in the world. Obviously, coming straight off a win with Shane Lowry, he's arriving at probably his favorite golf course in the world, and he seems to be in good form. So happy to take him at the top here. I was interested to see how I could balance like a Rory Wyndham start to this build and dive down lower, but I think that would have been rather ambitious to hope I could get both of those within my team.
Well, there you have it. I was definitely considering Rory with my first pick here as well. It just seems like a good get-right spot for him, giving back to a course that he loves. I'm not a whole – I mean, you know, Rory's maybe not in his best form, but it's still in better form than most. So not a lot to dislike about Rory this week. Spence, what about you? Will you be playing Rory?
You know, I would say, Joel, that – just the way that this draft has played out at this moment, you've probably been put behind the eight ball. There were three players that, from a projected win equity standpoint, were either significantly ahead of everybody else or at least marginally enough so to where it's noteworthy enough to mention it on the show. And that's the Clark, Xander, Rory threesome that just got put out there. So, hey, David, there's a 69-man field. I mean, you got to expect these kind of things for that. But I think that when you look at this tournament, and I alluded to it with Xander, I think Rory would be the other name to have that conversation with. Pairing two of those together and trying to make a build from there is a very intriguing route to go. Nobody's going to be able to do that on this show, unfortunately. But if you are making builds, it's something I would keep in mind.
Yeah, well, I think it's natural for me at this point to pivot and go for a more balanced-looking build because of how this draft started, which I'm okay with. Like, I mean, that's something I would have considered doing if I hadn't fallen to me in this draft, because I think a balanced build in this tournament could actually make a lot of sense on your roster construction and be a little bit different. So I'm totally fine going this route. I'm really just contemplating in my head, you know, which guys I want to take at first, if I want to start on the value or if I want to start – with my studs. I'm going to start with my studs. I'm going to start with my first two picks are going to be Cam Young and Sahith Theegala. You know, again, staying in the high eights, low 9K range, both guys have easily top 10 upside. I think either one could win the tournament. And these are the types of picks that, like, if you're starting with Rory, Xander, Clark, you probably at best can fit one of those guys in. With me starting here, I can probably get another player or two in the 8K range while kind of balancing this out. So I think you can go this route in this tournament and have a lot of success. I mean, really all you need is one of those big three to not win the tournament, and then I think you're ahead of the field. So you know, Cam Young obviously has the distance that you like at this course. He's been playing really well. The ball striking's been there. And Sahith Theegala seems to have made some major improvements with his driver. And if he is able to keep that consistency, I think he's permanently elevated himself into that upper tier where you're going to see him get, you know, 10 to 15 top 10s this year. So with that being said, I'll ask you first, Spence, are you playing Young or Theegala at all this week?
One of the things I always look for with Theegala is where does his course specific proximity land in comparison to his baseline projection? That's something at the Fortinet Championship that helped propel him to that victory. And while you're not going to necessarily get as big of an increase here, there's also only, you know, limited players in this tournament, but he ended up climbing 28 spots in my model. And I would make an argument that one of the biggest changes that I have gotten from a statistical standpoint within my sheet is this iron increase that we've gotten. Like, we haven't reached the levels yet of what Wyndham Clark did to end up taking down elevated events, majors, everything that's come with it at this point. But the goal is on that sort of a trajectory right now. And if this iron play can continue, number one player in my model in expected putting, I do tend to believe that some of his waywardness off the tee can be mitigated slightly just because of the distance he has. If everybody's missing fairways and he can play out of the rough and he's a big, strong kid, like, he's great around the green, even if some of those scrambling numbers have regressed a little bit this season. Even still, he's inside the top 25 of my model here. But I really like the Thigala pick. Like, my first two outrights that I punched once I ended up reconstructing my card ended up being Wyndham and Thigala. So I got Thigala at 33. You can find a 35 out there if you shop around, and that Wyndham number's been on the move. But I really like the Thigala play there, Joel.
Boom. There you have it. I love it. David, would love your take on Thigala, Cameron Young, and you are on the clock with your second pick.
Yeah, I mean, look, really, really simple for me. I think yes and yes. You know, they're both great fits for the golf course. Cam Young, whatever you want to call him, I expect him to finish in the top 10 at this sort of event. It's a golf course that's really built for his game. I couldn't take him at the number. I just thought he was a bit too short in the odds markets this week, but I think he's a fine play for DFS. The golf course should really suit him. And same with Thigala, you know, just to back up Spencer's point, particularly over 150 yards, he's really, really doing very well, and that's where he's gaining a lot of his strokes. So the driving accuracy isn't such a big thing at Quail Hollow. It's obviously nice to have both, but the rough isn't too penal. He's not going to get such a penalty for missing the fairways here, which can be the one weakness for Thigala, but he can use his approach play, especially over 150 yards. I think it's going to be a real benefit. And kind of in that vein, another player who I think is mispriced this week, further down the board, but is gaining in both 150 to 200 yards and 200 yards plus on his approach, is Kurt Kitayama. Plenty of driving distance, really nailing it on approach lately. Hasn't finished worse than 36 in his last five starts. Looks to be in good form. The putter looks to be coming round. He's long and straight off the tee, but particularly those approach metrics from 150 plus, he's one of the best in the PGA Tour on both of those metrics, from 150 to 200 and 200 plus yards. So I think he's great value this week. And we've seen him show up at big boy tournaments, right? Like the Arnold Palmer, when he won that, was not threatened whatsoever by the fact of the other names around him. Same with the Scottish Open. Played well at the PGA Championship, another long golf course, finished fourth there. Very similar metrics to this course. So I find that Kitayama, when he gets in the mix, he kind of tends to stick there. And I think at 6,800, he's just fantastic value.
Boom. I love it. I do agree. I think that is a great value pick. The way he's been playing, to me, he seems underpriced here at 6,800. And it makes sense. You took Rory, that you went and got your value pick early. I like that pick. Spence, how about you? Are you on Kurt Kitayama at all this week? Before you get to that answer, audience, you're on the clock. It looks like the nominations are already in. Great job. We'll lock your pick in after we hear from Spence.
Yeah, I think Kitayama is one of the better values you can consider in the $6,000 section. And I've seen the pick that has been made, and I would argue that is the best value that's on the entire board. So I am very frustrated with the audience's pick there. I like the Kitayama pick, and that's where I would have pivoted, unfortunately, but that's almost just bad and worse on the two picks that have been taken, unfortunately, for my lineup. But love the pick from David, love the pick from the audience.
Boom, there you have it. The audience going for value, and they're getting a good one. At least in Spencer's mind, with Pavone at 6,500, that does seem pretty low. David, you are the Pavone whisperer. You were the first one to bring him to our attention weeks ago before he won the first tournament. He is still playing pretty well. Are you on him all this week?
Yeah, I do really like Matthew Pavone here as well. And could have gone either way with Kitayama or Pavone with my selection there. Pavone just loves these really long, tricky golf courses. That tends to be where he shows up. That's where he got his victory for us early in the season at Torrey Pines. We tipped him up at 125 to 1 there. And it's a very similar course in terms of the metrics of what you need to do well. And it's really what Pavone looks for, not just on the PGA Tour, but on the DP World Tour as well. Those long, tricky golf courses is where he shows those up. So I agree. I think he's great value at 6,500 and a nice start to the build for Team Audience here.
Boom. There you have it. Great job, Team Audience. Spence, you got two here. You started with Wyndham Clark. Where are you going next?
The other thing I just want to throw out there about Pavon. So one of the things I looked at in my model is I like to see just who graded in the top half of every single category that I weighed. It's kind of something that I implement on the back end of the equation there for a very small percentage, just to kind of find extra safety. Nine players in this field landed inside of the top half. Eight of those names are all 30-1 or less. Pavon is the only name that was one of those options that you could get depending on exactly where you shopped around. I think you can still find him at, I want to say 120 or 125-1 out there. I think he's one of the, like, I left this out for a reason when I said Clark and Thigala were the first two bets that I made. Pavon was actually the first bet I made. I just didn't want to disclose that on the show and have him not get back to me, but love the pick there. That kind of puts me in this precarious position now, just because would have loved to have stacked the top with two names. Really would have loved to have had options like Kitayama and Pavon down beneath. Kind of puts me in this position now where I'm going to have to deviate from the original game plan. I think I'm going to go with the golfer to where I would argue that he is, I guess I'll say marginally overpriced. But I also think from a public perception, he is massively underrated because there has been this certain stigma that's come out about this player just over and over again that people don't want to play him in. A lot of the metrics inside my model are trending in a positive direction. You have back-to-back top 25 finishes at the Masters and the RBC. The RBC is always a course where Cantlay plays well, but I'm going to take Patrick Cantlay at 9,800. I will let you guys talk about that. I have to figure out what the next route is going to be for my pick here. I got thrown off with Pavon and Kitayama being off the board because that's where I had planned to go, but I'll let you talk about that very quickly and I'll give my next pick in a second.
All right, David, we'll start with you.
Yeah, Cantlay's an interesting one for me this week. I really didn't know what to do with him. You know, like it doesn't feel... I've always kind of regarded Cantlay and Schauffele like in a very similar way. I feel that they're just like almost twins that were separated at birth and sent off to different families, you know? And it feels like Xander's accelerated this year and Cantlay's kind of been left behind a little bit, perhaps. But I did struggle with what to do with him because I'd say Cantlay's probably the better driver of the two. And the metrics over 150 yards do look really good. So, look, I don't think that he's the worst in the field by any margin whatsoever. I'll certainly have some exposure to him. I think there's probably other routes that I'm going to tend to go, which is going to be probably going more towards that Wyndham Rory kind of build and then diving down further the board.
I would double down on that sentiment. It's just unfortunate when the board changes, but I will give my next pick. So there is a player for me. He's going to carry a lot of popularity and I'll have to figure this out on the back end of the equation here, but massive upside numbers in my sheet. Some of the safety returns leave something to be desired for a golfer that I have at 13% owned. But you look at some of this recent form that he's put together, there's been a victory. The weighted scoring has him inside the top 15. Any of those ball striking metrics are going to love his output just in general. I'm going to take Akshay Bhatia at 7,500 as a golfer that I think is just mispriced on the board. I understand the popularity around it, but I think even just the way that this build has started with it, Cantlay already separates it ever so slightly. He's going to be one of the least owned players in the $9,000 range, and it's not going to be that difficult to deviate off from there too.
Interesting. I was planning to take Akshay there, so I'm definitely on him. I think that's a good pick, really good value for this tournament. The way he's been striking the ball, I think you're getting a good number in terms of pricing. You know, I was a little bit more torn on Cantlay. You know, obviously Cantlay is a great player. I think the question you have to ask is, you know, is he going to be able to pay off his salary as being one of your top two? I, to this point, have been off of him, but I can be convinced. And I kind of have a similar notion that Spence had where it's like, given full options, I'd probably go a different route, but given limited options, I can certainly wrap my head around Cantlay. So, but those seems to be the weeks that Cantlay ends up having a big week. So certainly enough upside for that pick. Audience, it looks like the pick is locked. Let me double check and see if I see the lock sign.
I think they're still working it out. Looks like the audience is still debating at the moment. Barty is just gone, so you can't have him. We've had one person nominate JT, and then a lot of people say JT is not their selection, to put it lightly.
Well, I'll say, as of recently, Zach Jeffers is the audience captain. So until we see that lock button from Zach, we will wait until it looks like the pick is in. But as that gets finalized, David, I love your take on Akshay this week.
Yeah, I really like Bhatia. So does Prasant and the chat there. Look, I think that his ball striking's been excellent. I think this is a really good spot for him. His victory came at a golf course where driving distance was a real factor. You need to be strong off the tee, and it's the same at Quail Hollow. You just have to hit driver readily and often at this golf course. And I think Bhatia has just been striping the ball beautifully this year so far. The approach metrics is really popping of late. So I think he's a really strong selection. And in terms of the audience, another strong driver who showed up well last week, played decent enough at the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson, the worst named tournament in PGA Tour history. He played very, very well last week as well. So nice build for the audience in terms of collecting some strong drivers for their team.
Boom, there you have it. All right, audience, Steven Yeager, another good pick. I'll be honest with you, my next two picks were going to be Bhatia and Yeager. So value picked off the board. I think those are two solid plays. I think David mentioned earlier in the show, the last person and the only person to beat Scheffler this year is Steven Yeager. I think this course does set up well for him. I'm intrigued by the pick. I'd like to hear from you, Spence. Will you be playing Steven Yeager at all this week?
Here's the only thing in my model that gave me some form of trepidation of moving forward. And even if you look at some of the sharper markets out there for matchups, he is a massive underdog to most of the people he's against. And I think what is at least being found with this is, while Yeager has added a ton of distance over the past year, and it's something that we have noted on this show countless times, at some of these longer courses, he is a negative mover in my model. He graded 56th out of 69 players in strokes gained total on long courses. That's at least something worth noting here. My model really liked him, so I'm not necessarily under the same belief as that answer or what's been happening in some of these markets. But, you know, it's always worrisome to me where when I add in on Wednesday some of the sharper moves in to just figure out where my numbers go, I assume Yeager will be a slight decrease in my sheet. It's still going to probably propel him as a value at 7,500 just because the price tag is too cheap in my mind. But just the only thing that I would add to the mix that I've found noteworthy.
Boom. All right. There you have it. David, would love to hear your take on Steven Yeager this week. And then you're on the clock with your third pick.
Yeah, the Scheffler killer. Look, as I said, I think that he performed really well last week. He looks like in decent touch again. I've wondered if he might struggle a little bit with the bounce back after the victory over Scotty. I did wonder if that might put paid to some of those chances last week, but he performed well. And I think that any golf course you can find for Yeager where driving the driver's going to play a big part is really key to his chances. He needs somewhere where he can dominate with the driver, and that's exactly what Quail Hollow provides. My next pick, I'm going to go and take a driver of the golf ball that I think that a lot of people don't appreciate has added a lot of distance to his game this year. It's kind of gone under the radar, but Corey Connors is quietly extremely long off the tee now. Like, go and look at his data and see that his last sort of like 10 to 15 tournaments, he's been adding a lot of driving distance. And I think that a lot of people are going to go away from Connors because we had an expectation of him over the last couple of years where he's kind of been an accuracy guy and he's kind of lacked distance at some of these big boy courses, but he's added a lot to go with that. He's excellent over 200 yards. He's one of the best on the PGA Tour with his irons. He's excellent over 150 to 200. He's actually one of the best in the world in that category. And so to get a player who at the moment is under 8,000, he's in the top three in this field from 150 to 200 and in the over 200 category, and he's added a ton of distance. I think he's really, really sneaky. A lot of people aren't going to be on him this week just because of those previous matters I talked about, that he used to not be so long off the tee. So think he's an interesting play.
I love it. I love it. Spence, will you be on Corey Connors at all this week?
I will be, as always with Corey Connors, and this is an answer we could give for any tournament and just insert Corey Connors' name. It'll come down to what he's able to do with the putter. Love the ball striking returns that he has from both a proximity standpoint, from distance, and David alluded to some of the driving acumen that he's bringing. He's a really top-notch quality driver of the ball that even with me, and we know that, but with the distance coming into play now, it's intriguing because as everybody knows, and I've said this a million times, I run my model from a longer duration of time than most people do. And that has been one of the things that over the past couple of months that I just see it ticking up ever so slightly. And I would make an argument that my model is even behind what the actual movement is when you've gotten these massive shifts in performances. Like it's things we could talk about with Clark last year and names like that. But this is a very nice spot for Connors, who graded inside the top 15 of my model in every way that I ran it for the most part.
I love it. I love it. I got two here. And of course, I got to take the risk. It's been a little too long for me since I got a withdraw. So I'm going to lock that in here. Make sure one of these two picks is definitely going to withdraw in Will Zalatoris and Hideki Matsuyama. So yes, I know Zalatoris is the most likely person to withdraw from a tournament of all time. But hey, if we're playing GPPs at 7,900, it's clear. There's a rare combination of price to upside you get from Zalatoris if he's healthy, which is a big if, and I understand the risk that I'm taking with this pick. But certainly you can see that there's upside there with him if you get a healthy Zalatoris at under 8K. So I'll roll the dice for a big tournament. And Hideki has been playing lights out golf. He didn't have his best showing at the Masters. He was one of the highest owned guys. Probably some disappointment, which maybe is pulling some people off of him. But getting Hideki at under 9K, the way he's been playing this year, which has just been unbelievable with his distances that should line up at this course, I think it's a great value. I think he has enough upside to win another tournament here, or at least top five. So I think these are two really strong value plays. I will be honest in saying I like Hideki a lot more. There's obviously a ton of risk with Zalatoris here. But I do believe in the caliber of golfer he is, there is upside there. So again, I wouldn't play Zalatoris in any sort of cash game or anything like that. But in a GPP, he might be worth rolling the dice. Spence, will you be playing Hideki or Zalatoris at all this week?
I like Hideki. I am out on Zalatoris.
Fair enough. How about you, David?
Well, you probably saw my reaction. I really wanted Hideki as a pivot from the other selections. I mean, look, this is just the nature of we're drafting four lineups in 69-man field. We are going to steal picks off each other. I completely agree with Hideki, particularly has just been playing so, so well. And it's a golf course that should really suit him. So congratulations for getting him on your team and loving the build of your team at the moment, actually, Joel, in terms of a lot of strong drivers of the golf ball. And it feels like a ton of upside there as well.
Appreciate it. Love that. David, you got your fourth here, about 7,800 to spend. I will add an interesting tidbit to the rest of this draft. We're all hovering in the general same range of players left, which means there should be a bunch of stolen draft picks over the course of the next, three, 2.5 rounds. So things should get interesting. David, who are you looking at here?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be some more picks stolen, I would say, moving along in this show. Look, I'm going to take a golfer that a lot of people are not going to like this week whatsoever, but he's a model darling and is going to continue to do so. And I think he's got great upside. And I feel that he's very good value at 8,000 flat. And that's Tony Finau, one of the best of the world on approach. We know what he can do with his ball striking. He's both long and straight off the tee. Just coming off a 12th at the RBC Heritage, second at the Houston Open. And I think the key is that he's made some changes with his putter, and it is going to pay dividends eventually. And all it takes for Finau is one decent putting week. His last five tournaments, he's been at or above the field average with his putting. So it does look like those changes are starting to make some real dividends for him as well. And then the week before that, he only lost 0.02 strokes gained putting. So basically four out of six, you could say, say he's at field average or gaining with the putter. So that's a really promising sign for a golfer who's one of the best with his long irons in the world. 150 yards plus, he's just ticking every box for me. And he loves those long driving golf courses like Vedanta, for example, at the Mexico Open.
Boom. I love it. I love it. I was looking at Finau. He just does seem underpriced at 8K. It's funny. I was thinking, we always used to say on this show, when they finally bring Finau's price down, right? Well, I would love to get back to play him. Well, they've done it. Now it's time to go play him because he's gotten that price adjusted. You know, he certainly does seem like a good fit. So I think that's a great value pick there. Spence, before we get to your pick, audience, you guys are on the clock and your pick might be locked in already. But if it's not, let's get that locked in as you guys are up next. But Spence, are you playing Tony Finau at all this week?
I personally think that there's very few options in this lower $8,000 section that are a value. Tony Finau would be one of those names. So I like the pick from David.
Boom. There you have it. Audience, your pick is not locked in. We are falling a little bit behind. There's a couple nominations out there. We're going to need one to get doubled as we wait for that. And we give the audience a minute to pick. Thus far, without ruining any future picks, is there anyone that maybe, you know, we're all probably priced out of that you're a little surprised did not get drafted? I'll ask you, David.
Let me have a look. I'd say, yeah, it's interesting what's going to happen with Tommy Fleetwood, I think, at this tournament. I think a lot of people are going to avoid him because of the perceived lack of upside. He's won plenty of times on the DP World Tour, though, and it's pretty hard to win a golf tournament. So I think that people will be a little reluctant to play him. I mean, he's just finished third at the Masters, seventh at the Texas Open before that. He won in Dubai against Rory McIlroy, for example, and he's finished 14th, fifth at this golf course, and he finished fifth at the Los Angeles Country Club that I mentioned. Is a pretty good correlation. So I think he's an interesting option at the top, and given where we're sitting salary-wise, I think Fleetwood may not end up on anyone's team, maybe audience, if they decide to go dumpster diving.
I agree. I was looking at Fleetwood. I ended up not going that route, but I kind of had a similar sentiment to you where I thought he was someone that could have been picked here. I think we might have a controversy on our hands. Zach Jeffers, who we've been relying on as the official lock button, has stated the pick is Fitzpatrick. But if I'm doing my own look through, I believe the pick should be Schenk, as it was doubled by Thunder Valley. So I'm going to need a third party to confirm the audience pick. Should it be Schenk or should it be Fitzpatrick?
Okay. Well, here's what I'm going to say because it adds some intrigue to the show. My next two picks were going to be Fitzpatrick and Schenk. So regardless of what happens right now, I'm getting somebody stolen.
That is great. Oh, man, I love that. Interesting. It looks like the momentum is now coming in on Fitz. But I still think that technically the pick should be Schenk because that is how it came in. I'm okay with allowing the audience to get Fitz because it does seem like there's more enthusiasm behind Fitz, but now Sia saying Schenke. David, I'll let you make the call here. Who is the audience's pick?
I think that we force the audience to go with Adam Schenk as their official pick. You know, the rules are it's the first player who gets two nominations. That was Schenk. I mean, if you want to change your mind after the fact, well, you know, tough bookies. I mean, and let's face it, the audience has beaten us twice, I think, in the last month. We can't be giving them any favors at this point. So, yeah, let's force them to take Schenk instead. I agree. Both plays.
Rules are rules. You got to follow the rules. Adam Schenk it is. Lock it in, which, in fairness, I think is a good pick. As a value play in the low 7K range, he's someone that will be in my player pool as well. He's been playing well. We'll go with you, Spence. Will you be playing Schenk at all this week?
Yeah, I think Schenk's one of the better values on the board, which really affects this build for me. I'll let David answer this as I try to figure out what I want to do next.
All right, Spence, you got two. While we wait, David, will you be playing Schenk at all this week?
Yeah, look, I agree with the pick. I think he's a solid option. I agreed with Fitzpatrick as well. Fitzpatrick would have been the next pick for me if he had made his way back. So I'll have to also scramble and maybe look at how I want my last two players to go from here on out. But I think they're both very good options. Shanks just looks to be playing really good golf. I mean, he's playing incredibly consistently. The approach for Shanks looks to have improved a lot as well, which is really key for his game, is based around his ball striking. Fell off for a little bit at the beginning of the season, but he's now gained on approach four straight, 13th last week, and then, you know, some pretty iconic performances like 12th of the Masters, for example, making sure that he's back at Augusta National next year was very, very impressive. So, look, I think that he's trending in the right way and showing up in the right spot. So I think he's a good value.
There you have it. Good pick, audience. You got another one coming up here in a moment after Spencer gets his two in. So get your minds together, align on who you're going to follow up with. It sounds like it won't be Fitzpatrick, but Spence, enlighten us.
Well, here's the problem, and I could come off as a really good guy on this show and tell the audience I'm going to let you have Matthew Fitzpatrick, but I have some salary issues with how I wanted to make this build. So I'll just be very open and transparent with what my mentality was going to be. It was going to be Adam Schenck, Matthew Fitzpatrick, as I talked about, and it was going to put me in a range where I felt comfortable. But the problem now is if I end up taking Fitzpatrick and still go in the same sort of a range of what I'm looking for here, I'm kind of stuck, if I'm being honest, because there's these differences in values that I have, and it's going to push me down if I go a specific route into the 6,300 range. And I don't really want anybody at 6,300 or less. Like, that's the cutoff point for me. I think you have some golfers at 64 that are playable. So I actually think the audience made the right pick here to where they're just going to be able to get Fitzpatrick now, because I'm trapped and I don't necessarily love these next two selections. This is not what I plan to do. It's kind of I'll call it the 1B for each name, but I wouldn't even necessarily call it that. I'm going to take Siwoo Kim at 86. There's no ownership for him. The safety numbers liked him. The upside numbers had some questions. And then I'm going to take Tom Hoagie. And I would rather have Adam Shanks. So they really put me in a bind here.
Well, I'll start off by saying I thought I was going to take Hoagie with my next pick. So I'm annoyed by that one. A stolen pick. We'll chalk it up. We were right about that. And I like Siwoo too. I mean, I think some people might not be playing him because people go a little too all in on the long distance driving, and that's only guys they play. And it's like, I think that's an edge. Those are types of golfers you want to target. That does not mean you can only play guys that drive the ball really long. Siwoo's not going to be the longest hitter, but Siwoo's been playing great golf recently, and all forms of his game have looked really good. I think we get another solid showing from Siwoo. So I really like both those picks. Double endorsed by me. Audience, you are on that call with that second pick. You can get your guy. I assume that's it, but let's lock that in, audience. Let us know who you're nominating for your next pick here. And while we wait, David, would love your feedback on both Siwoo Kim and Tom Hoagie.
Yeah, look, I mean, Spence said himself, and this is the case that comes when we've got a very limited field and four of us drafting, that you're going to be forced into spots where you're going to take guys who aren't your first preference. I really liked what you said about Siwoo and the fact that you are going to see some guys pop up on this leaderboard that aren't the longest drivers, okay? Like Harris English, for example, has played very well here. He's not the longest driver in the game, but he's really good over 200 yards. And Siwoo's been playing really well with his approach. And same for Tom Hoagie. I mean, look, it wasn't the performance that we wanted from Hoagie last week, but a lot of that came with the putter. He's been putting lights out so far this season, and maybe a return to some Poa overseeded Bermuda, which he's putted on very well earlier in the season, could spark some life and some progression in the putter there. So I think they're two fine plays given the circumstances where Spence was positioned.
I love it. I love it. Audience, congratulations. You got your guy, Matt Fitzpatrick, came back to you. Things are working out well tonight on the draft, guys. I'm happy for you. And we'll go to you, Spence. Will you be playing Fitzpatrick at all? Obviously, you said you liked him, so we know you will be playing him at least. You didn't get him on your lineup. But any additional commentary on Fitzpatrick this week?
I was surprised on how much my model actually liked Fitzpatrick. And that's not normally an answer that I give, but I mean, he was fourth overall. There's that negative movement for upside, which is part of the reason why the Thigalas of the world is the route I went for outright betting. But I think it's a nice price tag here for Fitzpatrick inside the top 11 for weighted strokes gain total. We know historically these harder tests are usually where he finds his success. So I really like what the audience has been able to do with almost this entire lineup at this point. You got probably the best value on the board in Pavon. I would say you got one of the best lower $7,000 golfers in Shank. And, you know, Xander is what Xander is. I still think Xander is arguably the best player in this tournament, even if my model ends up being wrong there. So I think the audience is crushing it right now.
Boom. Audience. Great job. Great draft so far. Seems to be a consensus on your draft here. David, would love your take on Matt Fitzpatrick. And then you got your fifth pick.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of relates to how I would have rounded out this build. My plan was to go with Jake Knapp, who's just been striking the ball so, so well. The approach numbers look really good. He's got tons of distance off the tee. I think he's decent value at 6,500. It is going to be a little bit popular, but sort of similar ownership numbers to Matthew Pavon is what I'm seeing. And he looks like a really good value at 6,500 for to show up at a big kind of spot. He's shown in some of these weaker fields what he can do. And coming off a probably disappointing Sunday, he could use that as a bit of motivation coming in here. And to combine that with Matt Fitzpatrick was my plan to round out this lineup. So unfortunately, I won't be able to do that just because of the way that this draft is rounded out at the tail end of it. I think it would have been an interesting way to build going Fitzpatrick Knapp at the end. So look, you know, well done to the audience, not just stealing Shank from Spence, but forcing him into a position where you were able to take the exact same two golfers that Spencer was going to take. We all know how sharp Spence is, right? So if you can steal a couple of golfers off him, then you're probably looking in the right spot.
Boom. There you have it. I love it. I love it. David, with your fifth pick, who are you looking at?
Yeah, so look, I mean, Benny Ahn has just been playing such great golf this year. We keep talking about how good statistically he's looked, and a lot of people just seem to still be missing the boat on him. I mean, he's been kind of playing at a level, he's in the top 30 kind of conversation in the world this year, and he's got tons of driving distance. The approach numbers look really good. Two key things that I'm looking at Quail Hollow. The concern for Benny Ahn, I mean, this probably wouldn't have been the route I'd gone ideally in terms of building the construction of my lineup. The concern comes with the putter. He has been putting a lot better this year, but he hasn't putted here very well in the past. That would be the concern, is whether he can adapt to the greens. But we have seen an improvement with the putter, and you're kind of relying on what happens with the flat stick a little bit this week. So as I said, look, would it have been my first preference to go to Benny Ahn? No, but I think statistically he rates it really well with the ball striking, and just hoping he catches a bit of a hot putter to show up this week.
Well, I'm having my pick stolen left and right here. I was going to take Benny Ahn there. I think Benny Ahn's playing really good golf. Again, he is a course fit from the terms of he's been hitting the ball really long, and that's going to be an advantage of his on this course. You know, he has that upside where, you know, we saw him, you know, get a top five last time out. So, you know, he can. And again, if he's in that groove with his putter, that's the question mark. Then I think the sky's the limit at 8K. I think it's a really good value, good price for a Benny Ahn. So I like that pick. Spence, how about you? Will you be playing Benny Ahn at all this week?
So I will note that it's minimal increase in my model, but I think any increase with a putter is a good thing with Ben on. When I ran this specifically for similar green complexes, he jumped about 10 spots in expectation. So, you know, David alluded to the ball striking that he's going to bring both from the driver and the iron play. If the putter can be, I mean, for him, it needs to be neutral, I guess. But like, if he can be a little bit better than like you would expect in some of these spots, ownership would really be the only concern that I have with it. But his ball striking this season is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I am with you there. Great pick. All right, I got two to round out my draft. I had a lot of the picks I was planning on taking stolen. So I am doing a bit of scrambling right now to rearrange who I'm going to take here. All right, and I've nailed it down. So, but wait, here. Will you guys say something and give me 30 seconds to solve? Because I just had an idea, and I just want to see what I can afford.
Yeah, so I guess I'll answer the question that I didn't necessarily get to when it comes to a player I was surprised that wasn't taken. I'm a little bit surprised that Max Homa's name wasn't called. We looking at a golfer here who has two victories in, you know, the last 4 years of this event being played. I think he's going to be popular. I expect a lot of people to want to back him. I would think just from an ownership standpoint, like right now he's the fourth projected name off the board. So with four teams being taken, and what do we have right now? Three, four, five players, 9,000 and up. I would have thought Homa would have been one of the names that would have been called from that mix.
Fair. Something I looked at too. Interesting that he got left off. All right, I've settled in. I'll even walk you through what my thought process was and what I pivoted to. So I was planning originally when it came to my pick, I was going to take right here JT and Taylor Moore. And I was getting ready to lock that in. And then I just decided, I looked at Alex Noren and I said, no, I want to take Noren over JT. So I went with Noren, which gave me enough money to upgrade Taylor Moore. And I'm going to go with Kirk. So my two picks officially are going to be Noren and Kirk. You know, I'm okay with playing JT this week. At 8,500, the price is coming down. I think he could have a good showing. I just think it's more likely that JT ends up getting like 20th or 25th. He just hasn't been that spot on, which isn't bad, but I don't think it gets you the upside that you want. I think Noren's actually the guy who has the upside. Noren's been playing really well. He's been so good around the greens. I think he has the better chance to spike. And I also think Chris Kirk just possesses more upside. He's been super consistent recently. If you just look at his numbers, he's been giving people, and I'll just break it down for you right now. Chris Kirk in his last outings in April has a 10th and a 16th. Then if you go back to March, 26th, 44th at the Arnold Palmer, 20th at the Classic. So since March, in the last 2 months, he's gotten you two top 20s and two top 30s with zero missed cups. That's very consistent for a guy who's only 7,100. He'll hit the ball well off the tee. He doesn't have too many major holes in his game. There's a lot of consistency, which I like, especially for my last pick, who's a value play there. I'll start with you, Spence. Will you be playing Noren or Kirk at all?
So here's the thing about Justin Thomas. I'll answer that very quickly, and then I'll get to Noren and Kirk. Thomas has a ton of ownership around him, and I think it's justifiably so with what we've seen from him at this tournament. My model absolutely hates Justin Thomas this week. I have to be honest, though. I think my model is wrong in this spot. I tend to agree with some of the public sentiments around him. I have been off of Justin Thomas every single week for pretty much the entire year. I don't know if I'm going to necessarily jump in and say that I'm on Thomas when he's going to be 20% owned. That's probably better in other markets that you don't have to worry about a 20% owned Justin Thomas that still has volatility to him. But I would not be shocked if Thomas ended up going out there and winning this tournament. I just want that to be on record. And that goes completely against my model, which is something that I never come on shows and do.
Wow. Big statement from you there. I love it. David, because of the topic, we're going to need your take on both my picks, Noren and Kirk, Justin Thomas, and then we got to see who you're taking here with your last pick.
Yeah, I think it was an interesting conversation there between the two of you and your selections. I think I probably would have gone the Taylor Moore, Justin Thomas route.
I would have also.
Yeah, I think I do like Justin Thomas's record here. Obviously, he was fifth at the RBC Heritage, and the approach play looks like it's in a really good spot with Thomas. The reason for the results has really been the putter, and if he's returning to a spot where, for example, he won the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, he had four of his six finishes. He's finished 26 or better, and most of those were before it was a limited field event, so he's kind of showed up here previously as well. I think it's a good get-right spot for him, and I like the correlation between Valspar and Wells Fargo. Valspar is another long golf course, particularly approach over 200 plus yards, and they actually use the same greens and same grass types as the greens at Wells Fargo as well. And Taylor Moore's a past champion at Valspar, so quite like that route. I think Noren's been fantastic. I do have some concern about this driving distance, probably the main thing. As you said yourself with Seaway, right? We can't take everyone who's a long driver, because otherwise you're just going to end up in these massive ownership pools, and somebody somewhere is going to be a shorter driver and just manage to put lights out and perform in the top 10 as a result of that. So that would be my take. I think Chris Kirk's a really good pick. I think Chris Kirk is playing really good golf just quietly. We haven't seen a whole lot of him since the victories in the early in the year. He's been pretty playing a pretty sparse schedule, and it's kind of like an out of sight, out of mind thing with Kirk. So I think that's quite savvy from a DPS perspective.
Yeah, ooh. If I didn't take Tom Hoagie and I decided to go with Matthew Fitzpatrick, I was going to take Chris Kirk. So to me, the Noren Kirk route feels a little bit more cash gamey, I guess, than the more Thomas route would. Like, I think for a four-man contest, if there was a cut that was going to be had, that's probably the route I would pick. But I do really like Taylor Moore this week. I thought he was one of the better values down in that section. And to me, Thomas, while he is boom or bust, it's a no-cut tournament to where I'm willing to take a gamble on him.
Boom. Well, it's good. I'm glad we talked about it. I might be making the change, but I'm sticking to it. We will see how this plays out. David, you got one left, 7,500. How are you rounding out this squad?
Well, I'm just looking at the audience chat because Silent Assassin says, let's see what David does because he's in the same range. So obviously some fear there that I might have a scan through and see who they're going to take. But look, as I said, my preference to round out this lineup would have been to go Fitzpatrick Knapp. That was kind of my ideal route to round it out. And quite happy to get Benny Ahn. I think he's good value this week. And kind of leaves me in a spot where the two names I was kind of deciding between were going to be Penrith and English. Obviously, Taylor Penrith had the win last week. Seems to be a really good spot with him. He's got plenty of driving distance. The approach pay is really good. Hasn't really shown up here previously, but he is playing a lot better. And the other big carrot this year is at the President's Cups in Montreal, and we've seen the Canadians really hone in this year. They're performing really well off the back of the fact that the tournament's going to be in Canada. They're desperate to make that President's Cup team. I was kind of thinking I might go that route, but I am going to take Harris English, mainly based on the fact that his course history here is just really, really good. I mentioned at the top of the show that Los Angeles Country Club, that leaderboard ended up reading almost identical to a Wells Fargo Championship leaderboard. In terms of the guys who are in the mix of the top 10, that almost all played very well at Quail Hollow, and Wyndham Clark obviously completed the double. Harris English finished eighth at that tournament at Los Angeles Country Club. He'd also finished third at the Wells Fargo. He says 17th here previously. The slight concern I have with English is that he's lost on approach in two of his last three, and I do worry that there might be some regression for English in terms of his approach lately. That is a slight concern, but I'm kind of relying on the fact that this is a really good spot for him, given his course history, and he's very good in terms of the approach metrics, particularly the 200-plus yard bucket, which he will end in quite often, just given his lack of driving distance. He will have a lot of shots over 200 yards at Quail Hollow. He's very, very strong in that range, though, and the short game should keep him going. At a course that's pretty tough for the putting, between 5 to 15 yards is actually in the top five most difficult golf courses on the PGA Tour, but Harris English is a really good putter, so he's got that going for him as well. So I'll apologize to the audience if that was who you're going with, but that was my genuine decision, was between Penrith and English anyway, between those guys. So certainly wasn't an attempt to steal, although that's probably what I've ended up doing.
I love it. I love the drama this week on the DraftCast. Audience, you are on the clock, so get your nominations in with your last pick, 8,700 total to spend. I'll add, I like Harris English. I think every week Harris English tends to be underpriced, undervalued. You know, let's not forget, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago, he was a guy who was consistently in the upper 8K range, one of the better golfers on tour. He had that injury and never really got back there. The results are starting to show that maybe they should, even though the price tag hasn't. So until the price comes up, Harris English is on my radar almost every week. Spence, how about you? Will you be playing Harris English at all this week?
I tend to think that the position that David was in, he of all the players that would be left for him in that position, I think he probably took the best option that he had available. I mean, if he wanted to leave a lot of money on the table, I guess you could go to like the Taylor Moore route with it and just have an extra budget or Jake Knapp or whoever it ends up being in that range. But if we're almost using our entire salary, and even according to my model, it likes Harris English the best, I think that was probably a very savvy pick for what he had.
There you have it. All right, audience, great job getting that last pick in, locking in Cbez, who having a good year. Seabez has been playing really well. I would love to get your guys' take on Seabez. We'll start with you, David. Will you be playing Bezuidenhout this week?
It's an interesting one, right? Because this is a ball striker's paradise at Crow Hollow. Approach play really does come to the fore at this golf course. I mentioned it's pretty tricky in terms of putting. We know that Bezuidenhout's a really, really good putter, so that can be a benefit of him. We've also talked about the fact that there are going to be guys without driving distance who show up. My question with Bezuidenhout is, like, he's almost like too far off it with driving distance. I think he can tolerate not being the longest driver in the world, but he is very short off the tee. And that's where my concern, I guess, comes with him. I mean, the audience could have looked at, I think, a little bit higher. Maybe I probably would have gone with the Justin Thomas route. I know it comes with some risk, but he has got some upside. And I think that would have been my preference there. Just very concerned about the driving distance. And they wanted to leave a ton of money on the table. Ricky Fowler, I think, is an interesting, intriguing option this week as well.
Yeah, interesting. Audience decided to leave a good amount of money on the table. They're going to get Seabez. So it sounds like that is someone they wanted. Spence, would love your take on Seabez. And then you got one with 6,400 left.
I mean, you're going to have a lack of par five scoring inside of any model that you're running, specifically on my model. You're going to have a weighted total driving that places him dead last in this field of everybody. All of that being said, I still think he's an intriguing name. When I look for leverage of who's the best leverage option to be found, I think a lot of people are looking at this in a position where Bezuidenhout doesn't have the distance that you would want. You're going to carry in this position here where I think a lot of people think he's overpriced for where he is. And you know, we play a game to where we're able to see ownership projections and make decisions based off of that. I don't know what Bezuidenhout's upside actually is for a tournament like this, but he was the best leverage play I had inside of my model at sub 5%. So for that reason alone, like, he's top 25 in all iterations, even with the lack of distance and the lack of par five scoring that he brought to the table. I think he's intriguing. I would prefer the Justin Thomas route just because I think that lineup has a little bit more firepower that way, where I really like what the audience has done, even with Bezuidenhout being there, to make this completely different. But yeah, I mean, I think with Thomas being an option, I probably would have gone that route.
All right. So there will be, because you can't afford him. So if Thomas has a big week this week, there will be a lot of regret in the draft, guys. All right, Spence, with the last pick here, who's your value play of the week under 6,400?
So I'll fire off a couple names that I cannot afford that I think that are at least intriguing. And some of these names have been taken, but you know, I think a Keegan Bradley's fine. He's probably below most of these guys like Kitayama and Taylor Moore for me. Pavon would be my favorite, which I've alluded to multiple times. I think Jake Knapp is very intriguing for all the reasons we've talked about. But of options that I actually have available to me, and I've already talked about, I think at 6,300 and less, there's very little playable commodities that I have. Like, the only player that even graded inside the top 50 of any iteration of my model was Kevin Tway, and that just became because of the distance that came into the mix. I'm much more comfortable in this 6,400 range, and that put me in this position of Cameron Davis or Eric Cole. Cameron Davis, we know he has the distance. Eric Cole has the reverse of that, to where not a good driver of the ball, has a lot of concerns with the game, has been very hit and miss this season, but I actually really liked what I saw from Cole during the Zurich team event. You know, don't forget, he almost took a 70-year-old Russ Cochran, almost got him into a made cut there. I understand the lack of all driving statistics. Like, we don't even, he has no distance, he has no accuracy, he has no driver, and that's part of the problem here. But I do think he is too cheap from what we have seen from him historically, at least over the past season. I'm hoping that some of the metrics that I have seen, at least from a daily perspective, will outweigh some of the weekly numbers or the seasonal numbers that we've gotten. I'm going to take a shot here with Cole. I know what I'm getting into with him, but him and Knapp at 6,500, I'll remove Pavon from the equation here because he's in a different mix. Knapp and Cole were the only two guys at 6,500 or less that really catapulted in my model from an upside outlook, and I can't afford Jake Knapp. So I'll go with Eric Cole.
Eric Cole. Yeah. I mean, at this price, we've seen – it hasn't been recently, but we've seen him have some big finishes. There's certainly upside. Course fit questions, yes. But at 6,400, you know, you certainly could have done worse. David, would love to hear from you. Are you on Eric Cole at all this week?
I won't be on Eric Cole this week. I think, as Spence mentioned, the driver is just going to be a real question for me. I think, like, if I contrast it to, say, Bezuidenhout, right? Like, Bezuidenhout's lacking a lot of distance off the tee, but at least he's accurate. Eric Cole's kind of neither, right? And there's a kind of like ends up in this gray area with him. So I the one I would have been really interested in, I'll put it to Spence directly, is you didn't mention Patrick Rogers. And I really like the fact that he was fifth at RBC Heritage last week, and he finished second on debut at Quail Hollow, another real long drive of the golf ball. And would have wondered, I guess, like what your take is on him, because that probably would have been my preference out of the guys you kind of ended up stuck in, given what the audience did to you.
Well, I think it's the Wyndham Clark mentality without the irons improving over the run that we've gotten from Clark. We know he has the distance. We know he has the putter. I think Rogers is certainly somebody to consider down there. And I guess just according to my model, which is where I'm going with it, like, I prefer Eric Cole. And the answer I will give, David, and I think this is, you know, it is what it is with it, but like, I don't think anybody's going to play him. It's like, you're not on him. Nobody's on him. He's going to be arguably the lowest owned player, maybe of this entire tournament. Like, he probably will exceed what we get from Matt Kuchar and some of these other names, but this is going to be a percent and a half, 2% owned sort of guy. Like, we're not getting much further than that in my mind.
Boom. There you have it.
Yeah, to that point, I mean, I do have him as in the bottom 10 out of a field of 69 in terms of ownership. So in terms of leverage, if you've seen numbers that you like with him and you're relying on some of the good play that we've seen on him early in the season, then yeah, there's probably no better spot to get some massive ownership leverage for sure.
Yeah, it's the hope is the proximity numbers in the putter. He's third in the field for me there. The driver is a massive problem that's going to have to be, I don't even want to say fix. He's not going to fix it this week. He has no accuracy and he has no distance, but he does have an ability to scramble and he does have long iron play. So, you know, the hope is that he can put the pieces together at no ownership whatsoever.
I would make the argument for him being, you know, this is not going to be a tournament where the winner is 20 under. So if he just avoids blowups and cleans it up every hole, he can find himself, you know, near the top of the leaderboard, gets you a top 15 at this price. That is all you would need. So, I can justify the play there. I love it. We are not done yet. We apologize. We are a few minutes over time, but before we let you go, do me a favor, hit the like button, give us a follow. It goes a long way. Let us know who you think is going to win the draft. We will come back next week and crown a winner. Before we let you go, we have first round leader plays this week, and we'll start with you, Spence. Who are you looking at in the first round leader market?
So I will drop my first round leader plays when they become available over on Win Daily. You know, when I'm quickly scrolling through this board and I'll let you guys give your answer to it, I do think there are some intriguing long shot options to consider deep down this board. Like a name for me that kind of was one of those options was a Kurt Kitayama. He's able to spike in a way in my model that is very intriguing for one round. Like I obviously like him for more than that answer also, but I thought the 66 out there that you could find was an intriguing price for a golfer that climbed inside the top 25 for any of the real high-end metrics of what I was trying to find this week. And the proximity numbers look great. So I probably will be on Kitayama. We'll add it further from there.
All right. I love it. How about you, David? Who are you looking at in the first round leader market?
Yeah, so I mean, I've actually got Kitayama on my first round leaderboard. I think we're looking in terms of upside. He can be right there or thereabouts. When he won the Arnold Palmer, obviously started with a very hot start, and that was kind of his path to victory, was getting into the lead or close to it and then holding on from there. So I think he's certainly got the boom or bust potential that you're looking for in a first round leader. So yeah, I saw the 66 to 1 number and thought he'd be a good option. Other guys, I'm going to go in descending order from there. that I've got in terms of that boom or bust potential that you look for in a first round leader. Akshay Bhatia, I think he's really suited to this golf course, plenty of distance, can definitely go low when he gets his putter rolling and get him at 50-1. Sahith Theegala at 35-1, again, massive upside, can absolutely spike in just one round and come out and shoot really low. And probably my favorite player is right at the top of the board, the defending champ, Wyndham Clark, 25-1. Although what I would say is that one interesting strategy is if you don't like Rory McIlroy at $8 or so in the win market, you can give him a first round leader at 17s. You know, so we're looking at a guy who's looking to win this tournament four times. He's already completed the treble at this golf course. He's finished second twice. Rory, when he tends to win golf tournaments, tends to do it when he's leading from the front. And you're getting kind of double the price on him being the first round leader versus winning the tournament at the end of it. So that was at least intriguing, but I'm just going to stick to the four numbers given the reduced field and the fact that that price with Rory is a little bit lower. But I think that's a very viable route if you wanted some exposure to McIlroy this week.
I love that first round leader card from David, and that's including just the mention of Rory McIlroy there. I think that's a interesting way to try to get some exposure to him, but I'm probably going to be joining on Bhatia also just by running my numbers right now. Some of the spike nature that he has is just astounding in my sheet.
I love that. I actually, my prediction is I think Rory is your first round leader, but I don't think he wins the tournament. I think he blows it over the next 3 days and chokes it away, but I think he comes out on day one and of course he likes and has a good showing, and especially the way David said it. You know, if you like a favorite like that, I really don't have a lot of interest in betting Rory to win the tournament at those odds. It's just way too small. But it makes a lot more sense as a first round leader where you get significantly better odds. Again, the court, all the reasons why you would like him still fit for one round versus all four. So to me, I think he makes more sense as the first round leader bet. I'm going to back that one as well. On my first round leader card, as Sia mentioned in the chat, I am with you, Sia. One of the guys, my favorite long shot that I like here is Cam Davis. You know, we've seen Cam Davis spike on some of these events where he comes out and has a hot first round. You know, he certainly has the ball striking. He can have the power to get there too. So there's a lot to like about Cam Davis. The first round leader at 55-1 is the way I want to play that. My last two plays here that I want to give out is Will Zalatoris. I got him for my squad. Again, plenty of concerns with his back for 4 days, but for one, he can certainly have a good showing at 35-1. And my last first round leader play, a guy we always see at the top of the leaderboards, especially early, guy I drafted, Cameron Young at 30-1. Appreciate you fellas tonight. It was a great show. Don't forget, hit the like button. Give us a follow. It goes a long way. Before the week's over, we will be posting updates in Discord. So if you want to get updated on weather, we might be changing our first round leader plays based on that. Definitely get into Discord. We also see some outright bets that will be posted. So follow along, get in the Win Daily Discord. If you're not signed up, sign up now. You will make your money back with winning plays before you know it. So big thank you to everyone who tuned in tonight. And in case, did I forget anything?
I'll let you do it, Spence.
Sports.
Appreciate it.